This is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Earlier this month, a young sei whale washed up on a North Carolina beach with an empty stomach and a plastic bag caught in its throat. Last November, a dead sperm whale in Indonesia made international headlines when more than 13 pounds of plastic were found in its stomach. These kind of stories are powerful symbols of a global plastic pollution problem, but they don't necessarily give an accurate sense of the scope or the nature of the problem or what can be done about it. So joining me now for some perspective is plastics researcher Kara Lavender Law. She's a research professor of oceanography at Sea Education Association. Kara, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
How much plastic is there in the ocean at this point?
We don't have a great estimate yet because we haven't accounted for all of the sources of plastics into the ocean. But one piece that we have tried to estimate is the amount of plastic waste that's generated on land that's not properly captured and contained and ends up in the ocean. And that estimate alone globally is 8 million metric tons of plastic entering the ocean per year.
8 million metric tons.
That's right. 8 million metric tons, which is a big number, hard to wrap your brain around. You can think of it as 5 plastic grocery bags filled with plastic trash stacked up for every foot of coastline around the world. It's a big number.
Wow. When we think about what plastic pollution in the ocean looks like, right? I mean, it's coming, a lot of it, from land, so it's our actual trash. It might be plastic cups or, you know, broken down pieces of plastic trash. There's also, of course, like fishing gear, a lot of nets that are plastic. How, like, what size, what does it look like, the plastic that's in the ocean?
Well, there's a wide range of shapes and sizes, and it depends on where you look and how you look. So at SEA, we've been towing plankton nets at the sea surface for decades, and what we get in our plankton nets are tiny fragments of plastic. So they're little bits of things that were once larger items, probably things that you and I use every day, but we have no way of knowing where any individual piece came from, either geographically or type of item. If you look at the seafloor, what is sitting there are typically larger items that were dense enough to sink once they entered the ocean. So if you look in even Newport Harbor, you'll see bottles and cans and plastic cups and things like that that just sank and really haven't had the opportunity to go anywhere. And then, like you mentioned, there is a lot of lost fishing gear, which could be lobster traps sitting on the seafloor. It could be large derelict nets that present a huge hazard due to ghost fishing. So really, the range of objects is down from the microscopic, as these things break down over time, to things that are very large and difficult to remove.
And we've heard more about those microscopic pieces, the microplastics problem, because it's really easy for those to get into the food web. I mean, it doesn't have to be a huge whale to start eating little teeny tiny pieces of plastic. Are those really the biggest threat at this point?
I think that the microplastics are probably the type of debris that are of the greatest concern, at least within the scientific community right now. Part of that may be that we understand and we can visualize and see the impacts of large gear that entangles animals. And that doesn't mean it's not a risk. It's a huge risk, and we shouldn't lose sight of that. But the scientific focus has gone to these microplastics, especially as we're able to detect smaller and smaller particles in all parts of the ocean, so not just floating at the sea surface, but in the water column, in the seafloor sediments. These microplastics have been found in rivers. They've been found in mountain lakes. They are airborne. So yes, the pervasiveness of the microplastics makes them of great concern. We know that animals eat these plastics probably incidentally because they're just there as they're doing their normal feeding. But we don't.
Well, I mean, if they're in the air, we're probably breathing them in.
That's right. And in fact, there have been studies that have detected microplastics in water that comes out of our tap and in bottled water and in beer and in sea salt. I mean, these particles are everywhere, but we don't really know what the impact is that they're having on the health of marine animals or on humans.
I mean, that was going to be my next question, because when you see one of these news stories, like a whale that washes up with a stomach full of plastic, obviously, we all know that plastic isn't supposed to be there. That's not natural. But is it harmful? I mean, we're not looking at the stomachs of healthy whales swimming around to know if they also have a whole bunch of plastic in their stomach and if that's really why the whale died. Are we making progress on starting to know what the impacts are, what the actual risks are?
We are. I mean, we're working hard on that very question. I think that is the goal, is to answer the question about what are these impacts. And if the amount of plastic going into the ocean increases over time, presumably those risks and impacts will also become greater. So there's good reason to focus on these questions. Your example of the whales is a great one because in individual cases, if you happen upon the animal and can do the work to understand its cause of death, it's very clear in many cases that the plastics were the cause of death. But that, what about the animals that we don't see? And that's a really hard problem to tackle scientifically in the environment. Where we're making a lot of progress with microplastics is through laboratory studies. And we're finding that these microplastics can cause harm, but they don't always. And it's really hard to take those outcomes and then extrapolate or say what's happening in the natural environment. So it's a really challenging problem to tackle. There's enough evidence to say we should still be working on this and trying to understand what those outcomes are. But there's not enough information to throw up the red flag and say everybody should stop eating seafood, for instance.
Even without that ironclad evidence that, you know, plastics are having X, Y, and Z health impacts or killing this number of animals in the ocean, a lot of us just have kind of a gut reaction that I don't want to breathe and eat plastics, and I don't think anybody else should be breathing and eating plastics. And yet it's everywhere in our lives. So I heard a story a few months ago that ended with a challenge, a little mindfulness exercise. Just be aware and count every plastic thing you touch in your life. And, you know, within 10 minutes of waking up, it was probably a dozen things. Just, you know, alarm clock, toothbrush, food packaging. Like, it's everywhere. As a plastics researcher, does that drive you completely crazy?
Well, one thing we have to remember is that these materials exist for good reason. We do rely on them, and, you know, they are extremely durable. Our lives, we couldn't live without plastics. We couldn't live our lives the way that we do today. And so I love that exercise, actually, because by touching all of those objects, you can have a moment and ask yourself, do I need that object? And it's not just, well, there's all this excessive packaging that we can do without, but we are a consumer society. And do we really need to buy all the things that we do, right? The more things we buy, the more of these materials we make. Now, the durable goods aren't usually the ones that end up in the environment. It's more of the single-use items or the packaging items, the things that end up as trash on a daily basis. So does it make me crazy when I see some of these items, you know, this disposable sort of culture? That makes me crazy because I think most people don't see it. And our job is to sort of say, let's think about that. Can you carry your own water bottle or your own mug and think about the number of cups, whether they're paper or plastic, really, that you can, you know, reduce from the waste stream.
So the governor of New York, Governor Cuomo, has actually proposed a statewide ban on single-use plastic bags that would make New York, if it passes, and it's been debated for several months already, but that would make New York the second state after California to have a statewide ban. And we've seen these bans coming up at the municipal and county level over the past few years. How important are those kinds of measures, do you think?
That's a really good question, and I guess it depends on your metric. I think these kinds of measures are important because they raise the public profile and interest in looking at the waste stream and looking at the products that we use. Is a plastic bag ban going to solve the ocean trash problem? No. But in my mind, a plastic bag is something that is easily replaced. It's not, you can carry a reusable bag. I think that our use of single-use plastic bags has gone in a direction that has caused excessive waste. And those, we know from the whale example, can be deadly to individual animals. And even if not, if you drive around a city and you see these things dangling in the trees, or they clog up sewer drains, or they clog up single-sort recycling facilities that are separating out our waste, like, there's lots of good reasons that we can reduce our use of single-use plastic bags. And then it brings that issue to the public eye. I don't think we can totally ban our way out of the problem, though. I don't think banning individual types of items is going to solve the problem as a whole.
And of course, even if we were to somehow magically ban or just cease all plastic production and use today, there's already all this plastic that's in the ocean. And there's been this project for several years, at least ongoing, called Ocean Cleanup. And they recently actually had this big launch. They were actually putting this device out into the ocean to try to gather up ocean trash. And then we heard, just a few weeks ago, that in fact that device broke and it's being towed back to shore. It didn't work. And I think, I mean, you're kind of just nodding your head here. For a lot of plastics researchers, this is not a surprise. Is it realistic to think that there is some way that we could clean up the plastic that's already out there, or are we stuck with it?
Well, again, I think the answer depends on where you're talking about. So for many of us, especially oceanographers, we had a lot of concerns about the Ocean Cleanup's plan because they're choosing to go to sort of the end of the line. The subtropical ocean, thousands of miles from land, is not only remote and a very difficult place to work, but that's where these small microplastics collect over time because of ocean currents. So you're sort of going to the hardest place to go try to pick up the smallest bits. So I think cleanup efforts absolutely have to be part of the picture, but I would love to see a focus close to shore or in places that are highly endangered. I'd really like to see the efforts on land before any of this enters the ocean to begin with.
And what about recycling?
Recycling is hard. I think anybody who tries to be an avid recycler knows, especially if you've moved between communities where the things you can and can't put in your bin vary. China used to accept a lot of our single stream recyclables, the plastics and the mixed papers, and they have since heightened their standards. So a lot of what used to go there can't. So I think recycling is facing a little bit of a crisis in the sense that we don't have a great functioning system within the country right now. I think we can collect a lot of material, but separating it and finding markets for it is very challenging, especially when raw plastic materials are extremely cheap given the amount of oil and natural gas available to make them.
So in the end, it really comes back to reduce.
As always, the waste management hierarchy has been around for a long time, and that's the top of it, is if we use less stuff, we make less waste, and that means less waste that can enter the environment.
So what do you as a plastics researcher do in your own household and in your own life to try to reduce both your use and then disposal of plastics?
Yeah, I think the same things probably lots of people do. I carry all kinds of reusable items, not just a water bottle and a coffee mug, but I have mesh produce bags that I carry to the grocery store. And I have, a stainless steel straw that I carry so that when we go out, my kids can use a straw without using a plastic one. I'm careful in my purchasing so that I try to buy foods in bulk containers. Much to my children's chagrin, I will not buy single-serve packages of yogurt or chips or all those things that they see in their friends' lunchboxes. And then I try to be engaged in my community, too, and teach my kids so they can teach their friends. You know, it's sort of trying to set an example just by your actions. I try not to preach, but to show people, oh, this was what works for me. Maybe some of these things would work for you.
Do you think that's going to have to be a groundswell of individual actions, or could there be top-down legislative or some sort of legal actions, not just banning plastic bags, that could help prompt the kind of pervasive cultural change, really, that you're talking about, that it would be the norm and easier, maybe, for people to carry all of those reusable items?
I think we have to attack this from all sides. I think we need product manufacturers and the plastics manufacturers to be on board, and in many cases they are now and trying to, you know, maintain their business but work towards solutions. We need people to think about their daily habits. We are consumers and we have incredible power, and I think we're seeing a lot of that come to a head now when we talk about things like straw bans and single-use plastic bans. I think that wouldn't have occurred without the groundswell, and really the ocean has been a great poster child for how these plastics can pollute and create problems in our environment. So yes to all of those things.
Kara Lavender Law is a research professor of oceanography at Sea Education Association. She studies plastics in the ocean. Kara, thanks so much.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.